What's going on? It's the Dream It Alive show. I'm your host, Ash Kumra, co-founder of DreamItAlive.com. The Dream It Alive show is all about helping you achieve your dreams and goals. We feature interviews with authors, self-growth experts, people that have essentially lived their dreams that can give perspective on how you can achieve yours. This episode is brought to you by DreamItAlive.com. We're a global community that guides you to create your dream life with visualization tools, dream boards, and helpful personal development content. Today's guest is someone who really understands what it takes to achieve your dreams and goals, and particularly the mind and soul aspect of your dreams. You see, it's one thing to visualize your dreams. It's another thing to put it down on your dream board and get inspired by helpful content and mentors and experts. But how are you living your life day to day so that those dreams are actually being manifested on, or I should say, on the terms that make sense for you? And I think someone who really understands this is John Gray, who is our guest. John Gray is the leading relationship expert in the world. He has written, as many of you know, the very successful book, Men Are for Mars, Women for Venus, and a series of over 15 books on relationships. He's also written a new book, which we're going to talk about momentarily, and it's actually what the focus of this interview is about. But really, everyone, this is a gem of an interview. I think what John's perspective and John's advice and John's where he's seen in life can help anyone, regardless of what stage you're in and in your life. So, John, how are you doing today?
It's a pleasure to spend this time with you. I like visualizing my future. It's a tool I've used for many years.
Well, you're preaching to my ears, sir. I love to hear that. Before we dive into your new book and, you know, talk a little more about what you just said, I'm curious, John, how did you get started with your whole career? I mean, how did you get started with, walk us through, like, your stage of life from past till right now, if you don't mind.
Well, very briefly, I never thought I would become a relationship expert. I was pretty shy as a teenager. I had close friends. Then I became a monk. The Beatles went off to India to study with the Maharishi, and I wanted to get high without taking drugs. So I went off, and just as the Beatles were leaving, I arrived. But I really liked the teacher there, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. He founded the Transcendental Meditation Movement. So he was a great mentor for me, and almost like a father figure. I lived with him for 9 years, developing and teaching his teachers, over 15,000 teachers of transcendental meditation, and I was a part of the program that taught that. So that was a big part of my life. It was not relationships with women. It was just with God, basically, and a mentor, and, you know, studying and being focused on achieving enlightenment. And around 28 years old, it was now time for me to do something with all that I had learned through meditation. And then I didn't go out and teach meditation, but it gave a foundation for me. My brother was sick with bipolar disorder, and so I left meditation in the TM Center and moved to California to study psychology to help my brother, because meditation wasn't enough. And then that led me into realizing I had some talents for counseling people. But also I had a different perspective. You know, most people, counselors in relationship, teachers in relationship, they weren't 9 years as a monk. And when you spend that much time alone, you learn how to be happy within yourself. And that really is the underlying spiritual message of all my work, really, is if you can find the source of happiness within yourself, then you're not so needy in a relationship to change your partner. It's usually when we want our partner to change that we become judgmental. You know, well, that's wrong. You should be this way. And so what emerged from that is a non-judgmental approach to relationships, and that's the birth of Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus, which is to be able to look at common differences between men and women that we would often criticize and judge. And I said, well, let's look at this in a positive way. And that gave birth to a whole new perspective on relationships, which is to accept differences. Don't judge them. Don't try to change them. But actually learn how to work with your partner and bring out the best in them wherever the differences may show up. So that was a big part of my message for 20 years. And then, you know, I'm in my 60s now, around 50 years old, I discovered I had Parkinson's. Now, that came from, as a child, I had some major concussions. And when you have big concussions as a child, your risk of Parkinson's dramatically goes up. And so I then, being a good researcher, I healed that. Very few people heal Parkinson's, and I found natural solutions for it. But in doing that, I realized that my relationship skills suddenly became even better when I sort of focused on creating optimal brain function. You know, meditation and positive lifestyle certainly help brain function. But when you have what I call, hyperstimulation in the brain, which is what's going on today, we don't have our full potential to access our full potential in the brain. And so when I healed my brain from Parkinson's, then suddenly it became so much easier to focus in my relationship with my wife, with my children. Life just became so much easier, and I realized it didn't take so much willpower.
Okay,
that's where I am today. So I teach relationships, and I teach the importance of nutrition and diet for brain health.
You know, there's so many nuggets of wisdom that one can get from this conversation. I want to dive a little further into your times with the Maharishi, because you talked about, meditation, and why is meditation, being mindful, important to you? What does it mean to you?
Well, a part of my success is the ability to say I'm going to do something and do it. You have to follow through. When you write a book, for example, you have to really focus and follow through. And years of practice in meditation, one thing, gave me, trained my brain to follow through on things. I can maintain focus on something for hours and hours and hours without getting distracted. And today, people are just so distracted, they don't follow through on things. That's a big aspect of being successful, is to be able to follow through. But also, people can concentrate outwardly, but they're not really looking inward. And what meditation does is allows you to take your concentration and turn it inside to where you see what's behind your thoughts, which are your feelings. And what's behind your feelings are your beliefs and your knowing. And when you get back to that place, then you're able to change beliefs. You're able to control thoughts. You're able to alter your feelings from negative to positive. It gives you an extra dimension to life. Just by quieting the mind, you go back to the part of you, which is the silence that gives rise to the impulse of thought, feeling, and then thought. And that's another perspective. And it's also the source of happiness. Other people make me happy, but if I'm in a bad mood, they have a hard time making me happy. But if I'm happy, then other people can make me happier. That's the right balance of things. And what happens is we get caught up thinking our partners make us happy. And yes, they do. But that runs out very quickly unless we also supply the happiness from inside.
That's amazing. And one of the follow-up questions I'd like to ask, because you gave such a great explanation of meditation, so I want to take advantage of the situation, is the visualizing. So when you meditate and your head is clear, you mentioned earlier in this interview that you're a big proponent of visualization. For those who don't know what visualization is, what is it and why is it important to you?
Well, the key with it, and I looked at your website and saw that you're also very clear about you don't want to just visualize, but you want to also generate the feelings associated with what goals you're setting. And some people aren't visual, so the visualization word sometimes throws a few people off. It's imagination. It's a pretend. What you do is you pretend. Just imagine. And it's what I did for years. Imagine being the number one best-selling author in the world, which is in my field. I am. And I remember when that happened, and during the decade of the 90s, I was actually a number one best-selling author in the world of all fields. I mean, it was amazing. But for 10 years before that, every day after my meditation, I calmed my brain. Then I would imagine, how would it feel to be the number one best-selling author, and what would people say to me? And I imagine people coming up to me, imagine what my life would look like. And most important, I generate the feelings of how that would feel. See, it's your feelings that give you the power to attract success and opportunities into your life. Literally, your mind starts justifying feelings. So if you're generating positive feelings of confidence and gratitude and happiness and sincerity, these feelings associated with your goals actually generate the attraction, the quality that attracts that into your life, as well as attracts it from within yourself, what it takes to achieve those goals. And what meditation did is meditation allows you to look inside, access the source of feeling, where you, from there you can more effectively generate those positive feelings. Not everybody can just effortlessly generate positive feelings, but the art of meditation, after many years, you gain quite ability to do that.
Okay. No, that's very helpful. And I really appreciate you giving that shout out to dreamtolife.com, and I really appreciate that explanation of visualization. I mean, I think you're right on the money, and I'm honored to know that someone of your stature is doing visualization and meditation, because that's what we want to help make the world be a better version of themselves. And it's not just about the external things, it's about the internal things as well, and you kind of elaborated why it's important. You know, when I connected with your team, I was happy to know that you have this recent book, Staying Focused in a Hyper World. And I actually read the book. I downloaded it on my Kindle, I read it, and it's a really amazing book. And me personally, why I found it fascinating is because I believe in our society, it's very easy to let what I call outside sources control your state of mind. These are medications, these are overly caffeinated drinks. I'm not talking about the herbal or green teas. I'm talking about the energy drinks and sodas and things like that. And your book really gives a great perspective on, you know, how you could really live a natural way of living and how you could use this natural living to address things such as ADHD and other things which typically need medication and other things. Now, I'm curious, what inspired you to create this book?
Well, what really motivated me, because, I mean, personally, my own personal experience is what a difference it made for me in terms of success in my relationships and the fulfillment in my life. I'd already been very successful, but with the right nutrition for my brain, suddenly my life became so much more relaxed, more easy. It wasn't such an effort to produce. So that was one significant motivation, but not enough to get me to write a book and shift gears, so to speak. The real key one was I kept watching these movies, the PBS specials, the news, the papers. They kept saying how many kids are taking ADHD drugs, and nowhere did it say the side effects of these drugs, and nowhere did it point out that there were natural solutions that have no side effects. I mean, think about it. One out of six children, 6 years old, is taking a methamphetamine. I mean, these Ritalin and Adderall are basically like giving a child cocaine. It's just a lower dose. And it's shocking. There's a whole generation that's just sort of never going to connect with their inner source of intuition, of creativity, of happiness, because they're always being stimulated by a drug to sort of duplicate focus and concentration and pleasure. But after 3 years, it diminishes in its potency to do that, and now there's an injury to the brain. And, you know, I point out, you know, all those references in the back, studies from Harvard and other universities showing that actual injury or damage to the brain occurs when you take these highly stimulating drugs to treat children with ADHD and ADD. I also was motivated because as I became more familiar with the subject, so many people have challenges in their relationships. They're not able to sustain interest, motivation, and passion, particularly men. They lose that interest in their relationship, and this is another symptom of adult ADHD, not full-blown, but just partial, and it can be corrected so easily with some extra supplements. Your average 50-year-old man has half the testosterone levels he had when he was younger. This is also a symptom of this lack of dopamine in the brain, which increases the production of testosterone. So, you know, I'm in my 60s. I have the same testosterone levels I had as a young man. Your average 60-year-old has like 20%. I mean, this is shocking, and it's a really key hormone for men's health. For women, as they have this overstimulated brain, the symptom for women shows up differently. They tend to not so much lose interest in their relationships. They become overly interested in all their relationships, so they feel overwhelmed. They tend to give too much. Their brain can't calm down. And, you know, trying to teach them to meditate is even harder because their brain just can't calm. And that's the outcome of our lifestyle today, the high sugar content, the stimulants that we take. And then it goes even further, which is when foods have pesticides, when they're not organic. The pesticides, they kill bugs. When they go into our body, it kills the bugs in our gut. These are beneficial microbes that are necessary to digest our food. So our digestion starts going downhill. People start becoming more constipated, less regular, which the outcome of that means their brain is not making enough brain chemicals to experience maximum pleasure and motivation in life. So when your pleasure levels go down, your motivation levels go down, your focus goes down, then we become hyper-focused on extra stimulation, like, you know, video games for 20-year-olds is like off the chart. You know, sugar for most everybody's off the chart. We become addicted to stimulation because we're not feeling the stimulation from inside. And, you know, part of, you know, the whole success program that you're teaching people, which is so important, is you want to find that source of success inside. You visualize it, you imagine it, you let yourself look at what it feels like, you pretend that you're there. This is all by creating inside oneself fulfillment, as opposed to depending upon this excess outer stimulation to give us temporary pleasure. But actually, and I explain in the book, which is how it actually changes our brain, so our brain loses its ability, its potential to find inner fulfillment.
That's amazing, and that's a really good overview of the book. You know, and you know, one of the things that you talked about in the book, and you briefly mentioned in here, is ADHD and how ADHD is sometimes you can get over medicated with it. What are the different types of ADHD for those who aren't as familiar? They might not realize they have it.
Well, I really appreciate you asking the question. Not that many interviewers always read a book, so thank you. And I made the book short. It's 101 pages, the main content, so that people could read it really quickly. But see, ADHD is so misunderstood. If you actually look at the words, it's attention deficit disorder. It's not attention deficit disorder, because you take a kid who's diagnosed with ADHD, put him in front of a video game, and he has 10 hours of attention. It's just a dependence on hyperstimulation. And it shows up for different personality types different. For some children, it makes them hyperactive. Later, as adults, it tends to make them, basically workaholics, unable to relax, always have to stay busy. But for other children, it shows up as hypersensitivity. They're going to be more affected by EMFs. They're going to be more affected by Wi-Fi in a negative way. They're going to be affected by chemicals and dyes and colors and the food, everything artificial. Their digestion is going to be more sensitive. They're more sensitive emotionally to people. They tend to be more moody. They tend to become depressed, have body images and those problems. So they're hypersensitive. You get hyperactive. Then you get hyper-distracted. These are your more creative types, you know, the ones, writers, entertainers, performers, actors, people, you know, designers. People have more of a tendency towards creativity. They become hyper-creative, which, unfortunately, they become, as a symptom of that, is hyper disorganization. They lose things, they can't focus, they start new things, they never finish things, it's hard to finish things, they're starting too many things all the time. So that becomes a problem. And as children, they're the ones who are diagnosed as ADD, which is attention deficit, just not hyperactive. They just tend to be distracted, they can't focus, they have a hard time reading, they can't comprehend, they forget what they just read, they're always looking for something new. So then there's another type of child who's naturally more responsible, more compliant, and so forth. But when it's hyper-responsible, they have these big issues of perfectionism. They have to be perfect. What they do is never enough. It's very hard for them to create change in their life. They sort of oppositional. No, it's this way. We stick with this way. You said this. You didn't do that. They become obstinate. They can also become, you know, follow the rules or follow their rules. They can become very resistant to anybody or authority, or they can become super compliant to authority. It's what happens is our natural differences become hyper, and we tend to get stuck in them rather than flexible. And this is all due to the inhibited dopamine function in the brain. And that's what the natural solutions can correct. And for some people, they correct within a few days. Others, it will take longer. For some people, it's a few supplements. For some people, it's just taking bread out of their diet and sugar, minimizing sugar, and immediately they get results. So I explore all these natural solutions that have been well-researched.
So speaking of natural solutions, I want to take what you do, because you are clearly someone who has successfully used natural solutions all the way from your days working with the Maharishi to the present day in your 60s, overcoming things like Parkinson's. I'm curious, what are some daily habits or rituals or practices that you do or that you recommend for someone else? Because I love learning from examples. And what are some natural things?
Well, one is a regular meditation. I mean, first thing in the morning, I always meditate at least 10 minutes to a few hours, but I don't have that kind of time anymore. but 10 minutes is a good amount. And before I go to bed, I'll sit up and meditate for 10 minutes. So that's one thing, and that should be the visualization time as well. So that's A. B is I make sure that at least once a month I'll fast for a day or two, and once a year I'll fast for like a week or 7 days. Now, I don't suggest that to everybody. It's a little too extreme for some people. The last year, I'm in my 60s, so I have to stay really healthy. I fasted for a month, on soup, a vegetable soup, bone soup it's called. That's just a wonderful kind of healing soup. If you were in China, I visit China a lot and learned about that there. The more Eastern version is lemon and water, and take lots of supplements, mineral supplements. This is just important to cleanse the body, so cleansing. Another one is interval training. I don't do that much exercise, but I do interval when I walk my dog. It's a real simple thing. Every day I have to walk my dog. So I do interval training, which is you just run. You walk for a little while, then you do a burst of 20 seconds, and that's all. And then walk for a couple of minutes, and then 20 seconds, and walk for a couple of minutes, and then 20 seconds. And you get total workout. And you push your body to the max and then let it rest. Push it to the max, let it rest. And just do that a few times, you get great exercise. So that's so important, and that's proven to be more effective than any antidepressant. I mean, think about that. Just 5 minutes of exercise, although more than that is good, but of the interval training, they've proven to be more effective than aerobic exercise, than 8 hours of aerobic exercise, what I just described. It's amazing, some of these good techniques. And then every day I start my day with a superfood shake. That's been a big part of my cure for Parkinson's, which is undenatured whey protein is a superfood. That means it's not heat processed. It has high levels of cysteine. Cysteine is something that makes glutathione in the body, that makes brain chemicals and also detoxes your body. I take omega-3 every day. So I take vitamin C every day. These are some very important vitamins that we need to supplement with. I try to get as much sunshine as possible. I'm not as good at that. So I supplement with vitamin D3. I take 5,000, actually I take 10,000 IUs of vitamin D every day. And every week I make at home I make a yogurt that I use for the rest of the week. Yogurt, a homemade yogurt, is rich in probiotics that will help the gut and restore the gut. I have special a probiotic starter from Switzerland that has 42 different probiotics in it. It's called Bravo. This is like an amazing one that I use. And people don't realize that our gut is being constantly challenged because the foods we eat will have some pesticides. Even if it's organic, there's still going to be heavy metals in it that fall down from the sky and so forth. The world we live in is toxic. We have to help our gut. And for thousands of years, people have used probiotic yogurts, kefirs, fermented foods are like a very important thing, and I use the fermented yogurt. It's very easy to make.
Okay. No, thank you so much for sharing those habits, and I definitely agree with you about the interval training. I personally do that, and definitely with a lot of these foods. And,
I will say one thing. For years I did yoga, and I wish I continued it.
Why don't you continue it?
Well, when I was younger, I used to do yoga videos, physical yoga, and create flexibility. And then I, had kids and had a family, whatever. I've never gone back to it, but I still contemplate going back and doing more yoga. I'm just very busy in my life, but I do the interval training, get my exercise. But I'm not as flexible as I used to be, that's for sure.
Well, you're probably flexible in the mind, right?
Very flexible in the mind. That's my expertise.
I would like to jump to a question from one of our viewers. This is related to your Mars, men are from Mars, women are from Venus kind of days. Lindsay has a question, and she wanted to know, what's your take on the millennial generation, specifically the millennial generation, which is early 40s and under, is really focused on utilizing online dating and these instant gratification hookup apps like Tinder and all. What advice would you give this millennial generation?
Well, the key phrase there is instant gratification. That's pretty much what the new book is about, which is we are so into a world of immediate gratification is that when we meet people, We're excited to meet them, and we lose interest very quickly. That's one of the effects. When you get immediate stimulation, immediate gratification, everything's quick and easy to meet, to connect, to be stimulated. What happens is you don't have the ability to have patience, to follow through, to persist. And so what happens is people tend to get excited in the relationship, then lose interest. Right now, if we look statistically in the millennials, there's twice as many single people as there used to be compared to married people. So more and more people are not getting married. More and more people are hooking up and then losing interest with each other and moving on and moving on. And that would be what I would call one of the symptoms of adult ADHD, which is you're losing, you don't have the attention. You can't maintain the attraction to your partner, and suddenly you want something greater, something better. You're not satisfied with what you have. Now, there's nothing wrong with wanting more in life, but the key to it is wanting more while you're happy with what you have. And most people want more from a place of dissatisfaction with what they have, as opposed to a sense of fulfillment with what you have and wanting more from that place. And then you can maintain a relationship. So the millennials are having a really tough time sustaining love and attraction in their relationships. And they're living in a world of hyperstimulation. And, you know, living at Facebook, it's so you simply, people can spend hours and hours in these digital relationships, which, by the way, do not stimulate the same hormones that a personal relationship would stimulate. Now, that's very interesting. That's biological. That's physiological. Is that when you're having relationships online, you're going to have overstimulation of the brain. And then when you're in person, you now have a deficit of stimulation, and it's hard to make up for it. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying that many people, they're sort of in the illusion of, I have all these friends, but really, if you need to move your house, how many of them come over and help you move? That's really a friend. It's more physical. And so people will fall in love online, and they meet each other, and there's actually no physical chemistry. And it's very important that we understand that, is that physical chemistry is something very, very important. And also going through the process of forming relationships in person as opposed to online is a different challenge and more nourishing to our soul.
That's amazing. No, I'm just soaking it in because as a millennial.
And I want to mention something else, which I don't think the person asking the question is saying, but I'll throw it in with this. In our digital age, we suddenly have immediate access to digital sex. Online pornography is off the chart, and if you look at how it affects the brain, it's literally taking heroin. It is one of the most addictive things you can do. It's not an addictive substance. It's an addictive behavior that's as powerful as any substance you might take. And it's what it does is once you start enjoying addictive porn online, people tend to go for more and more extreme, because it becomes boring after a while. You need something more and more. And normal sex, normal sexual relationships become dull. Literally, your ability to be turned on to a real person diminishes if you take a lot of time being turned on to a digital person. And this is just I explain that physiological response in the book. It takes a little bit of time, but it's when you overstimulate with dopamine receptor sites desensitize, downregulate. So normal stimulation doesn't give you pleasure. Now your brain craves the high stimulation. So people become addicted to the internet type stimulation, and normal stimulation is kind of flat and boring, and we're not motivated. This is what they found, for example, with gamers, is that their motivation outside of sitting in front of a computer is dramatically lower, and they also have more weight gain. They're basically becoming sedentary people, and their lifespan will shorten.
You know, I want to conclude this interview. First off, thank you for that very lengthy and profound answer. It was a lot of tidbits of wisdom that I definitely personally got. And I wanted to just, you know, kind of end this interview with a thought, and tell me what you think about this. I feel that people, especially millennials and, of course, other people, in order to really become more present and more conscious and more, you know, like you're talking about, more just in love with life and not with these external superficial things, I really feel it comes back down to mind and soul work, meditation, visualization. For you, as a Maharishi and transcendental when you were younger. For me, it's meditation, visualizing, using my vision, trying to live out my vision board. Taking what you've done your whole life, and especially what you've done from this book, if you can give advice to a 21-year-old version of yourself, and this person has acknowledged that, hey, I'm part of this digital culture. I've done a lot. I'm not conscious. I'm not as present. I want to become more. I want to live my life freely, and I want to have more natural, habits. What are the things you would give that 21-year-old version of yourself so they can get out of the stereotypical issues that a lot of people now have?
Well, the stages of life. I wrote a book on how to get what you want what you have, and I talk about stages of life there as the brain develops throughout our entire lives. And from about 21 to 28, it's a really important stage that many people miss out on. It's the time to explore who you are. It's the time of self-realization. It's the time to become the master of your destiny. It's the time to make decisions for what you want, what you like, and explore and develop, not expecting it to happen overnight, but to learn about what's important to you and follow your dreams, follow your heart, do what you want to do as opposed to what everybody else thinks you should do. And that's going to be different for everybody. So having said that, how do you know what you want, what you like, and so forth, is you give yourself that permission. That's the first step. And the second step is some form of meditation, some sort of inner exercise that you do. And you learn that from someone who inspires you. The Geiger counter for everybody is what inspires you. In a sense, this is a time of mentorship where you read books, or you take classes, you take courses. People who in a sense, you're some part of you goes, wow, I want to be like that. And then you start to emulate that. That's, in a sense, that's like a master's degree, is you become a master of some thought form that was developed by someone else, but you're choosing it. General education is you look at a little bit of everything, and then you get your degree in that. Then your master's degree is where you learn to master what's already known. And once you master what's already known, then your inner master comes forward. Generally around 28, 29 is where your unique self can potentially emerge. In the meantime, you're discovering who you are, and some sort of discipline, some inner activity, some outer activity are very, very important at this stage. This is a time of education on choice. Earlier, you're just told you've got to study this and this and this. Then this is the time to develop yourself, to grow within yourself based upon what you want.
That is very, very powerful advice. And
looking for happiness by following your heart, and some of the challenges for that, it's really harder for women because women are very much cultured. Our culture pretty much demands from women to either be good girlfriends, good wives, or good mothers. And in that role, you tend to get your fulfillment by pleasing someone else, and you often can very easily discount your own wishes and needs. And while sacrifice for others is a fulfilling thing, during the 20s, the maximum fulfillment and important lesson comes from who am I, what do I like, what do I not like, be able to have boundaries around yourself as opposed to sacrificing too much. So in a sense, it's kind of a selfish time is what I encourage people. Follow your heart.
Well, John, thank you so much for sharing that last piece of advice. Thank you so much for this interview. And more importantly, I truly mean this from the bottom of my heart. I've read about 4 of your books so far. Thank you for doing what you're doing for the world. You are definitely an inspiration for many people, and I love the fact that you are someone who is curious about life, curious about where it can go, and it seems as even though the older you get, it seems like the more curious you get. And I say that because the depthness of this last book was so deep, it was so profound. Even though it was a short book, there's a statement that goes to show, quality over quantity. I mean, there's so much quality in each page, and I can't wait to see what your next book is. I'm already happy with what I have right now, taking your advice, and I want to get more now because your book made me happy, so I want to get even more happier with your next book.
Oh, it's really very kind of you, and thank you so much. And I want to reinforce the quality of your website. I went to it. The whole facilitating people and creating their visualizations. And even as we're talking, I'm kind of going back to my 20s. And I remember when I was meditating, a big part of when I'd be meditating for hours, you know, that was my main focus. I was constantly imagining what it would feel like to be enlightened, you know, and have all these people respect me and admire me because I was enlightened. So there was a bit of selfishness to the whole thing. As a matter of fact, it was very selfish. And, you know, I wanted enlightenment. I wanted to have my full potential. I didn't know what I would do with it, but I wanted to develop it, and I imagined how it would feel and how I could be important in the world. And that was a part of the journey for me.
Okay, well, thank you for those kind words, and I don't think this is a goodbye. I think this is until we talk next time. I have a feeling we'll be in conversation very soon. Have a great day, and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. You too. Bye-bye.